Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist and online editor in New York City.
And I'm Josh Pitok, a colorist in Los Angeles. And this week, we want to talk about panels, one of the most important things that a colorist can have in his or her arsenal. There's all kinds of different options for panels, third-party, ones that are made by the manufacturers. And so we wanted to open it up to a discussion about all the different options from the very inexpensive all the way up to the $30,000, $40,000 panels. Also, at the end of this podcast, we have a special announcement to make to all you guys. So stay tuned until the very end. We have something really big. So I think that we should start the conversation by discussing what each of us uses for panels. And no making fun of me for using a wave, please.
I have the wave too, Josh.
As I had said before, I get unlimited lives in Contra with the amount of numbers and things that I have to press on it.
It's a clackety panel for sure. I would say as far as entry-level panels, that's kind of the go-to panel for most systems. It's got really broad support, and it's not expensive relative to the other panels.
I actually really like that panel. A lot of people are not too fond of it, mainly because of how it looks. It's really plasticky, and it doesn't feel sturdy like some of the other panels. You know, when you start getting that muscle memory down, you're kind of stuck with one of those panels. So I've really figured out how to maneuver around it as well.
How long have you had your wave panel?
I'd say probably about 3.5-4 years, maybe.
Wow. Yeah, I've had a wave that's I've had for probably 3 years, 4 years, and it's still rocking. It's still it doesn't feel like the most well manufactured panel, but those buttons still work and the knobs still work and the wheels still work. It's got some legs to it. And I know mine has been pretty beat up.
The one thing I was gonna say about the wave is that especially for people who are either doing something where they really need to get going quickly. A wave is really set and forget with USB. And I think for a lot of situations, that's a high priority. You know, if you're a DIT or you're doing onset work, or if you're new to color and you're really just sort of getting so many things figured out initially, the wave's a nice thing to have because it's really going to work out of the box without a lot of configuration on all the apps that you'll use it with. The one big thing I'll say about the wave is that I had one for about 1.5 years. It was a really nice initial panel. The thing that made me want to move on from the wave wasn't that the wave was hard to use or even that I was bothered by the plastic or whatever, but it's just very deep. And so what I found was if you have a monitor and then you have a wave, I was able to arrange my keyboard right in front of the wave, but it did make for a little bit of a pinch situation. And so I think if I would say anything that holds the wave back a little bit is just arranging it on your desk might be an issue for some people. That's all. But overall, I really enjoyed using it. And I mostly set the menus to the a set of menus I use the most. I think it was probably like base mem and stuff like that. And then a couple others I used. I didn't actually go through and scroll through a lot of the menu options a lot. I really just found it easier to mouse those items. But overall, in terms of having lift gamma gain, the ability to have a nice smooth feeling trackballs to grab a couple buttons, it works really well.
Yeah. On that panel, it's all about the double punch.
Yeah, right. The double punch on the arrows. So there's two reasons really to get a control panel. And once you start doing color in the GUI, I think you find pretty quickly, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I think you find pretty quickly that you want to get a control surface of some kind.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, when you're manipulating, especially in lift gamma gain controls, they really interact a lot. And it's just really, really helpful and much more intuitive to sort of manipulate multiple values, your lift balance and your gain balance, for example, at the same time. That becomes really useful as you get into color correction.
I think we've had this discussion before. A lot of people ask me, oh, you know, what should I invest in? Should I invest first in a monitor or should I first invest in a panel? And sometimes I'm kind of leaning towards getting a good panel first because it's almost like it's part of learning the interface as well. You want to have that muscle memory down pat. You may not be making the right adjustments or what you think it should be, but I think it's pretty important to have a panel.
And that touches on the other reason to get on a surface is speed. You get much faster quickly on a control surface because you have the direct controls for a lot of functions. Even on a wave, there's actually a surprising amount that you can do right on the limited number of buttons and controls that are available directly on the panels.
Yeah. What you were talking about, Josh, with what you should get first, I think a lot of colorists initially are doing a ton of learning, and they don't necessarily have a requirement just yet for color critical monitoring. And so at least to a point where they'd be spending several thousand dollars on it yet, you know, you could probably be doing things on a very decent monitor for the web and then have a panel and be developing really rapidly with getting good with your panel. And then at a point when you're getting paid for a job or you're getting to a situation where you're able to deliver to something that needs to be really correct, then you can invest that next money that you might have in a display. But yeah, that might be a really good idea, getting a panel initially, using that as your first step toward becoming fast, helping you get gigs and move through them quickly. And then once you need to deliver to a decent level, getting a monitor that will take care of you there.
So the next lateral step, I would say, would be right to the MC Color, the Avid control panel. Have you guys ever used that?
Yeah, I've used it a lot. The price range is around the same as the Wave. I think the software packages that it supports are a little different. So like, for example, you can use it inside of Symphony or inside of Media Composer or in the DS. So those software packages might not be supported on the Wave panel. I've played around with it a little bit. I haven't spent as much time as I have on the Wave. But the one thing that jumped out to me were the kind of the small size of the buttons.
Same here.
Yeah, I agree.
That was the one thing that kind of threw me. You know, the Wave, as cheap as it feels, and cheap is a mean word, but it feels plasticky. You know, those buttons are nice and big and very easy, and there's a really clear response. Like, that clackety noise is actually really good feedback to your operating the button, right? You have a sense of what you're doing. The rubberized buttons on the artist panel don't have that feedback, and they're kind of hard to see, and they're not labeled at all. There's no labeling on a lot of the soft buttons. But
that's especially what really jumped out at me, is like, I never knew where I was with that panel. It was always like, what mode am I in? What is this button doing? So it was always kind of confusing. But one really nice thing about that Avid Artist is, at least with other applications with Symphony, you can remap the buttons in it. And that's one thing that I really do miss from the Wave or some of the other panels, is the ability to change the panel, because I don't really need stereoscopic 3D stuff. I don't, right, you know, generally need some of those other features. There's a few others that I feel like I have to dig deep into the menus, and it would be nice if you could just change some of those per panel.
Yeah. Well, we're talking, I think, at length so far about the third-party panels. There is obviously a difference when these panels work in multiple apps, and so there's a difference in behavior from app to app. The Wave, for example, there's the Wave interface lets you customize the buttons, but Resolve, as one particular example, doesn't actually use the Wave drivers. It uses its own drivers to run the panel. So when you're in Resolve, you're going to be limited to the Resolve Wave configuration. You're not going to be able to customize the configuration. But in other programs, you may be able to customize that. So in Apple Color, you might be able to customize it. Or if you're using it in, you know, I don't know, does Scratch support the Wave, Jason?
Yeah, Scratch supports a lot of panels. And one of the things that's really nice, actually, in Scratch 6, you could edit everything about a panel, basically, in terms of what those buttons related to within Scratch. There was an editor before in 6, but you found yourself often having to edit an XML file. And now in 7, they've made it even easier to just always be within Scratch and not having to go find config files. So they've really worked hard to make that and that work well. One day, you know, if we ever do have a shot at, you know, the same thing in Resolve, it's going to, you know, it's going to be like the earth parted. Because it's really nice to have that. I had a chance, actually, to use the MC Color for 2 days on an online gig for TV recently, last week. That was my first time, and I had to get on it and get moving quickly. And actually, I'll say it fulfilled the role well. I like the way that it fit on the table. I totally have the same issues with you guys about the buttons. They're small, and what that meant for me is that I really just didn't use them. What I did use, though, was the trackballs, the rings, and I used the saturation and hue controls as well as some of the other knobs. And I found that it worked pretty well. But one thing I noticed, and I was wondering if you guys found this as well, is there was some latency there that's not with the Wave. So when I would move the trackballs, there would be times when it would jump and be either behind me, or I'd need to go slowly so that it could stay with me. It would eventually get to the value, but there was a jumpiness to it, and I wonder if that's related to something with the Ethernet.
As opposed to the panel latency.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's true too. So, yeah.
So you were talking about the fact that I didn't know you actually had a JL Cooper panel as well, and I've been really wondering
I still have it, actually.
What happened to them? Like, where they make really good hardware. And I'm really hoping at this next NAB that there's some new thing that they're going to announce, because it seems like something that was really ripe for the picking for them.
They were in the panel market when it was a much more expensive market. When I bought those panels, we probably spent $8,000 or $9,000 on the set. Functionally, they're not any different than what you would get with like a Wave, which is like, you know, $1,500, right? I think the market just dropped down. They really made like premium, and they still make premium quality like hardware. There's nothing plasticky about those panels. They're, you know, it's actually steel and aluminum and you know, this very like rugged design. I don't know. I think the market just kind of dropped out. The third party market, it's all about the best bang for your buck. It's about economy, really, because that's what's selling in volume, right? The Wave volume drastically outnumbers the number of JL Cooper consoles that are sold, or even Elements, which are a really nice set of the new panels from Tangent, are relatively economical.
What do you guys think about people who might be taking a look on eBay and trying to find some of the bigger Tangent panels? Do you think that's a good route to go, or is there something there with regard to getting a nice set of used like CP200s or something like that?
Are they still supported by most software these days?
Luster uses CP200s, the Scratch uses CP200s, but I'm actually seeing a lot of installations that were on CP200s actually migrating over to Elements, because functionally it's got to be like a 7 or 8 year old panel now. Any benefit to the larger panels as opposed to the Elements is basically the same number of knobs and inputs and buttons on a much smaller footprint.
Right. And then USB as opposed to Ethernet. So if there's a thought that you need to have it easy, USB directness will allow you to get it going quickly.
But I mean, the CP200s are a nice looking set of panels. You know, when we were doing our Final Touch installation, we were considering like, should we go CP200s, which would have cost, I mean, probably $18,000 to get the set that we would want versus, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 for the JL Cooper. So that was the conversation. It's a very nice looking set of panels, and it was actually kind of tempting. You know, it looks impressive in an installation. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the guys at Park Road used that with their Mystica, right? Because they looked at the Element, and I think that they chose that same like large console feel was something that they were interested in. And the CP200 will give you that. And you know, I think it's modular as well, right? So you have a number of different components you can choose from. And
yeah, you can basically customize it yourself to suit what you want. So there's like a knobs, just like the Elements, there's like a knobs console, there's a button console, and there's a color wheel console, a trackball console. So I think most people go with that kind of config. It's similar to the Elements.
One thing that's nice too is that on the CP200, you have LED labels with every knob directly over the knob, whereas with the Element, you do have to sort of reference up. And after a while, that's not a problem. I actually thought that would be more of an issue than it is, but that is nice, especially if you're getting on it initially and you're in a place that you're, say, that isn't your home, you know, color bay.
Or it's customized panel.
Right.
The panel's customized.
So Jason, I was actually wondering, since you had come from a Wave and over to an Element, I mean, was it a huge difference? Was it one of those major shifts, or was it, relatively the same?
I would give it a big shift. Yeah, I would say that it was a really nice improvement. I enjoyed the Wave, but like I said, the Wave made my circumstance on my desk a little bit cramped. And so there was actually a time when I needed to do other things. Let's say I was doing things in After Effects or things that didn't use the Wave. I would move it out of the way. And there were times when then I would quickly need to do something in color, like say change and resolve for someone quickly. And I wouldn't even bring the Wave back. I would just do it in the GUI. If I had a longer project and I was going to be at resolve for say 2 or 3 days or something, I would reincorporate it. But that form factor was what bothered me the most. And when I got the Element, I comfortably have the Element. I have a knobs, a button, and a trackball panel. They're always here, and I have no problem. They're low profile. They're really wonderful to have around all the time. They're exquisitely built. If you've never actually handled an Element, they're just really, really wonderfully built. And I will say that the trackballs and rings, the buttons are largely the same, but the trackballs and rings are nicer. I would say that they are smoother and heavier, and they have a nice amount of friction to them. And then the knobs are really wonderful. And I heard that the Tangent guys put a lot of time into what buttons and the resistance that they chose and stuff. And you can really feel that. So,
Jason, you're kind of bordering on Dave's sweaty balls.
So we can't escape it, can we?
I love that feel. It's so smooth.
I know, right. Let me tell you, the tangent guys put a lot of effort into those too. So.
they did put a lot of time on those balls.
Yeah. I mean, what about you guys? I mean, have you had time now that we're on the element? Like, what's your experience with the element? And especially what you thought before you actually used one and after, because mine was bipolar. I totally was down on them initially. And then I actually saw them. I was like, oh, wow, was I wrong? So I'll admit that right away.
I mean, the biggest thing for me is the same thing as you, is depth. Is like you really sacrifice a lot of depth on your desk just to have this panel. It just basically takes everything inside and all the menus you have to jump through, and it just splits them all out. I'm assuming it makes you a lot faster as well.
I think the design is really, it's the new kind of multi-purpose room. It's not dominating your space the way that some of the traditional panels do, because they used to be installed in rooms that were dedicated to grading, and now rooms are not so dedicated a lot of the time. It's like it's part editing, part graphics, part VFX, part color. So having a set of panels that can kind of be out of the way is really a plus.
The only thing I think you don't really gain from the element, they look really nice and they look nicer than a Wave for sure, but you don't get that same wow factor that you get out of the Resolve panels, I think, or sure. A Blackboard. They don't, you know, somebody doesn't walk in the room and go, whoa, that's, you're really doing stuff in here.
I think let's talk about big boy, what I call big boy panels, because that's kind of what they are. Like they're the full-fledged panels, and it's, you know, the Blackboard or Blackboard 2, it's the Pablo, the Neo panels, or the Resolve control surface, which is like the big boy panel for Resolve. These are panels that are meant to be the centerpieces of your grading room, right? These are really for dedicated rooms. You wouldn't have this in a secondary room necessarily, where, unless you're in a Geico commercial, where you wouldn't have these things in a secondary room where it's like an editing room plus color. You would have these things in a dedicated color room. For those of you that didn't catch that reference, there was a Geico spot recently that had a quote unquote editing room where in off to the side there was the center console of the Blackmagic Resolve panels sitting by.
Yeah, and you know what? It's crazy. I swear, I think that was just a dark room with like a buffet table and a really, you know, ordinary computer monitor, and the Resolve panel made that entire shot. I mean, it went from like dude on lunch desk to color suite just by adding that. So it's true. The impact is pretty tremendous. And it wasn't even the full set of panels like Juan says. So that was an interesting commercial. A lot of people commented on that. But one thing I'll say too is that, you know, the panels cost some money. And actually, I know Juan, you recently made that sort of financial decision. And so if you're going to invest in those panels, there's this hope that you're going to earn that money back rapidly because the increase in efficiency. So how has it been for you since you've had your panels?
Well, the efficiency increase is tremendous. There's also kind of a cachet that comes with it. Like it's, you know, clients walk in and they're like, wow, this is a serious room because you've got the panels. It looks nice. It seems like a kind of a vain thing to say, but it's, everything we do is kind of creates impressions, right? The way we speak to our clients, the way we interact with them, and then also the way that our rooms look, you know, creates an impression. And I think, so that's part of it, is there's an obvious impression made by having the full size panels. And then the other part of it is that just it does change the way you approach things, because, you know, there's certain controls that are just much finer and much more precise on the panels. There's just things that are just much faster. And I don't like going back to the GUI. I actually find myself kind of sometimes taking the long way around a little bit to avoid actually having to touch my mouse. So I'll just want to stick to the panels. But I mean, they've been really, really phenomenal as far as the experience goes. Once in a while I have to go back to a Element or a Wave, and I find myself just really frustrated because, you know, I'm having to click through multiple submenus to get to something. You know, you're losing that muscle memory that becomes the basis of your speed and your flexibility, is that having that muscle memory to just, you know, I don't even look at the buttons anymore. I just know where it is and I hit the button and I have my outside layer node, or, you know, I have my HSL qual. You know, I hit the cursor key, I hit the vector button, I have my HSL qualification and I'm done. And so those things just become, you know, intuitive.
There's also some panel-only features like Blackmagic, panel-only features like copy second to last grade or something, or second before a grade. I don't think well, you have anything else.
There's a scroll mode, which is really cool. So the scroll mode, you shift in a scroll mode, and then you're able to kind of go back and shuffle back through all your previous grades and then find the grade that you want, and then you exit out of scroll mode and say, you know, save these settings from that previous shot. So it's handy. I mean, the memories become handier too, because it's like a two button solution to save a memory, and then a single button to pull it back up. There's also rippling. Rippling works on the control surface. It doesn't work in the GUI.
Wow. So tell me about that.
Well, with ripple grades, you can basically, if you have the same number, let's say you have 10 nodes in a grade, and you have three or four different grades, and so the shots are kind of balanced. You can group those shots together, and then you can ripple changes through the shots by just basically taking whatever changes we made to one shot, and it applies them into a new node, and then applies that node to every other shot.
I would use that all the time. I didn't think Resolve was capable of that. So it's actually capable, but you need to have the panels. That's remarkable. Wow. Okay.
There is, you know, you run into, there's an issue where you can't undo it. There's no undo. So it's like you're committing to the change.
Okay.
You'd have to manually go through shot by shot and delete that node in order to undo it.
Okay. Well, at least you could, though. That's kind of cool that it's there as a separate node.
Yeah, I find myself like not using that often. Occasionally I use it. I'm more inclined to use memories and just load memories and jump through that way.
Yeah. You know what I would really love is like a ripple update. You know, like let's say I decide that a number of shots are too dark and I want to bump them up a little bit, and just to set a new value for a lot of shots that I know are the same. That would be really nice, especially on that online gig I did. You know, you guys are talking about, you know, speed with shows and stuff, and I needed to get that grade done quickly. And, you know, I went in and did it by hand when we decided that the scene was too dark. But, you know, it would have been great to have like a ripple in that way. So,
well, there's things that I do. There's things that I do in the GUI that I still have to do in the GUI. Like, for example, I'll sometimes save a still and then pull up the node tree for that still and then just drag over one node. So if I have a node that's doing like a lift that I'm doing like an overall adjustment, I just drag that node into other shots manually.
You could use a fourth trackball as kind of a mouse emulation mode.
No, not anymore. Not on the Macs. You used to be able to do that in the Linux version. You basically switch into mouse, and then there is a keyboard still, but you don't have any mouse functionality. There's actually a USB hub on the panels themselves, so you can put like a mouse on. I have like a trackpad that I have hooked up to it, so I'm able to use it that way.
Yeah, but, and some of the earlier versions of the Resolve panel, sometimes you'll see in a demo, they have a little teeny tiny trackpad built into them.
Yeah, those are gone.
Yeah.
I wish. That would be nice. Yeah, I don't know why they took them away, but... Yeah, it would be nice to have the trackpad. You do see that like in the Blackboard panels, the baseline
the
Blackboard
with the
panels.
Tablet that's built into the keyboard.
They have a tablet built right in, yeah, and it's great.
Yeah,
that's a really nice feature. And that also has like a flip out keyboard too. You like flip the panel up, the tablet up, and there's a keyboard right there.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite designs in panels, because I'm mainly a Wacom guy, at least when I'm on Symphony. And just for making power curves or just getting around the GUI, it would be so much faster.
I believe it actually is a Wacom tablet. Like, it's a Wacom branded tablet, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. And so have either of you guys had a chance to work on a Blackboard before?
Yeah, I've worked on the Blackboard a little bit. So Blackboard 1, I haven't spent much time on Blackboard 2, which looks beautiful, but I've heard now that it used to have like a wood finish. I've heard they've changed that to like a composite compound finish. Like, it looks like wood, but it's not actually wood because they've redesigned it a little bit. But the Blackboard is a terrific panel. It's got a lot of soft buttons. Which is actually one thing I really like about Resolve is if you look at the Resolve panel, there's a ton of dedicated buttons on there. Some of them don't even have any functions. Some of them are mislabeled, but there's just a ridiculous number of dedicated buttons. And so that muscle memory becomes very, very second nature and just really important. And on the Blackboard, there's a ton of soft keys, which is handy because you're able to kind of manipulate a lot of things directly on the panels, but it means that muscle memory becomes less valuable because you're not able to exercise it as much because you're not using the same button for the same function over and over again.
Yeah. And then the big thing too, for people who are new to a Blackboard is what Baselite offers with, what is it? The Baselite 2, 3, and 4? Is that how it works? Essentially,
You can get Blackboard, the original Blackboard with Baselite 1. You still have the option of getting the original Blackboard with any Baselite, but I believe it's Baselite 2, 4, an 8.
That's right. That's how it goes, right.
Support Blackboard 2, which is the new panel, which has like really cool. Actually, it's like an LCD screen under the buttons.
Every single button, and right, yeah.
It's actually one. It's like a panel. I think it's a 3x3 or 4x4 grid of buttons on a panel.
Mm.
So, and then they have like a little optical transfer film. So it actually like allows the LCD image to shine through the button.
Yeah, not and just so images, but video as well.
Right, you can have thumbnails for your stills gallery. You can actually see the thumbnail in the button. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what you're paying for.
Although, I mean, I know that there's some colorists that just who use Baselite who don't want the panels in the room because they find them distracting. So for them, it's even more distracting to have this full color image in the buttons. So they'll actually take the panels out and use keyboard and stuff because they think it's less distracting.
Wow. And then I guess in terms of Filmmaster is the Precision panel, and then they used to offer a thing called the Valhall panel, which is really impressive. I mean, so the Valhall was very good looking and was very mappable, but now the Precision panel is really taking it up a notch and is almost, it's very comparable to a Blackboard now. Have you guys ever done a Filmmaster demo or been able to take a look at one of those? I was able to do that at NAB 2012, and it was really nice. It's gorgeous. I'm surprised it doesn't get mentioned more because it's really fantastic.
One thing that's awesome about the way Nucoda does it is you can actually manipulate curves in a different way with the panel. I'm still trying to figure out how they actually do that, but it looks like they're getting a lot of control out of that. It's just, I'm not sure if it's that they're manipulating one end of a point with the trackball or what. The implementation that they have for the MC Color in Avid with curves is not that great, but however they're doing it with Nucoda is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then they have a situation too where if you have a set of Valhall panels, they have a nice upgrade program to get to Precision panels. So there's an interesting angle out there where a lot of people who sort of want to keep moving up at least get what we'd say a very decent amount of trade-in value for their Valhall set. And so that was something I actually about a year ago was considering for myself. I ended up wanting to have a bay that was a little bit more VFX oriented as well as color. And so I didn't go with a large set of panels, but boy, did I consider that really closely, because when you get on some of those really nice panels, like Juan is saying, you really notice how there are some tremendous improvements in terms of just getting things that are really repetitive done faster. And, you know, it's funny, I talk to some flame guys and stuff, and they often mention things like, well, that's going to be 2 extra button clips every time I do that. And I do that 20,000 times a year. So that's 40,000 button clicks. So that's equivalent of 1 week of button clicking, you know, and these guys will bring that up, and you, when you think about it in those terms, you're like, my goodness, he's right.
Yeah. So that's only flame guys think like that, by the way.
Yeah,
exactly. They're like counting button clicks.
Right, right. So, you know, in the end though, repetition is what it is, and you know, you have to do a lot of it. So the panels help with that. And I think
you'd think like the VFX guys would start billing by the button click. They wouldn't have Rhythm and Hues going out of business. Like that's what they need to do, is shift to a per button click fee mechanism.
You actually have a meter, and if a guy doesn't like reach what he wants
no,
for the day,
they're counting them anyways. Yeah. Apparently, they count them anyway. They're like, oh, I've had to click 15 buttons in order to get this done.
Yeah, right. That's $12.
$35 right there.
So the Nucoda Filmmaster panel is the Precision and the Valhall. And then who else are we thinking of out there? I guess Mystica and a number of other systems like Scratch don't have dedicated panels. So you have to choose from the third party for those systems, even though they're very high end. And then I guess actually Quantel does have the Neo and the Rio panel, which is like a small Neo for Pablo.
And the Neo panel, if you look at the Neo panel, it's a lot of soft buttons as well, and the wheels. I think what we should do is, you know what we'll do is when we do the post on Lift Gamma Gain, we'll post some pictures up of all the different panels so you guys can see what they look like, because I think that's kind of relevant. You can see there's, you know, the common threads to all the panels are, of course, 3 or 4 color wheels, usually some access to presets, and then a lot of soft buttons. You always see a lot of soft buttons, and particularly in the high-end panels.
Yeah, that's usually my number one reason for going to NAB, other than seeing the monitors, is being able to actually feel how the different panels react to your input.
It's clear that the manufacturers, particularly the first-party manufacturers, put a lot of thought into the panels, because I think they think it says something about their product. So, you know, like the Blackboard 2 has that beautiful finish, and the Resolve panels are actually just very, very well made, and they look nice, but they also feel solid, all of these panels do. And of course, they're priced accordingly. They're not, none of the first party panels are inexpensive. You know, even the lowest cost, I think, is probably something like the new Pablo Rio panel, which there, what was the pricing on that?
I think that's like 18, I think, right? Or something in there.
Which is about the lowest cost,
right.
A first party panel that you can get. And that one, you know, it functionally, I think we had a conversation about this on Left Cam again. Functionally, you're looking at something that has about the same number of registers as a Wave. But of course, the software is going to be written explicitly for that panel, so you can rest assured that the software on that panel is going to be very, very well thought out.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing too is that, you know, I think there used to be a situation where color was really the, you know, the provenance of very, very large companies. And now that it's starting to happen more in a boutique fashion, and then mobile DIT stuff, as well as even people who are in small offices or homes or whatever, you really notice that the gap between the high-end dedicated panels and the $1,000, $1,500 third-party panels, there's starting to be options in that middle ground where there was just a tremendous void before.
Yeah, it's slim pickings on that middle ground, I'll say.
Still,
that.
Yeah.
I think if you look at, I mean, if you look at the Resolve ecosystem, where you go from, you know, the entry level being the Wave to probably the best of the third party panels, I think is probably the Element. Do we agree with that statement?
Oh yeah, for sure. For the buck, it's the greatest panel you can get.
It's also, I mean, just a nice, like, well made and functionally pretty good third-party panel, and that's I think we know with the four main modules, it's going to be like $3,500 right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go up, you know, to the kind of the next level up is, you know, eight times that, which is the full Resolve panels. But those, I'd say, functionally, you know, it's 10 times the functionality. You know, it's not it does scale, but it's just there's very little in between space.
Do you think somebody could make a really high end panel for $8,000 to $10,000 and come out with like a really good profit on it?
The key thing is software support, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if somebody makes an insane panel that maybe threatens the first party makers, they might not add software support, and then you end up, you know. But I do think there's, like, if you look at Mystica, if you look at Scratch, if you look at Luster now, which Luster doesn't really have its own first party panels. You know, those products, if there was a more advanced panel set that cost even, say, $15,000, I think it could do well in that market. I think you'd see a lot of those guys shift over. A lot of those guys are using CP200s, and they're kind of unhappy with them. They're old panels, and they're even shifting to Elements now because functionally they're getting the same function, but it's a smaller package and it's cheaper. And so you're seeing installations of, like, Luster, which is, you know, tremendously expensive piece of software, that are using Elements as the control surface.
Yeah, I know that there's a couple first-party manufacturers that are making panels. Like, for instance, I know that I heard from Jack Jones that on Nucoda you can use the center section of the Precision panel with some of their smaller color grading packages, like Nucoda HD. And then there's also the Rio, which is a really interesting angle because Quantel is quite high end, and the idea that they're making a more affordable panel is an interesting move for them. But boy, I tell you, I would really think that if it does take software support and you do have a color grading package that you're using, it's your primary tool, if these companies were to reach out to the boutique and even the mobile world with a compromise, something that's not $30,000 and enormous, but something that's very capable, that gives people the benefits of muscle memory and real honest mapping and hardware control that just works without any issue. I tell you, I'd sign up for that right away. And I think that, you know, it depends on what the overall offer is, but, you know, I would pay upwards of, say, $7,000 or $8,000 or $9,000 or even $10,000 for something really good. And I would love to have the benefit of that, you know. So I hope that that's a trend that happens
Anybody was to jump into that, I would say I would assume it would be JL Cooper, because I'd say that their other panels were kind of in that price range. But I think, mm-hmm. I think you're right. It's all about the software manufacturers and if they can get the support on it.
JL probably isn't doing it because they can't guarantee the software support, like Juan said. So,
But there are, for example, Scratch has opened their panel integration because they don't have a horse in the race. They're not making their own panels. So
right.
What
true.
Do they care what they're, so they make it open. I mean, there's other systems that do the same thing or are very quick to adopt third party panels. You know, I think Smoke is a system that would probably be inclined to adopt a third-party panel, right? They have no horse in the race.
Yeah.
There would certainly be support from the non-first-party manufacturer software packages. The question is there enough demand to support the manufacturing, design and manufacturing of such a panel?
Right.
That remains to be seen.
They could, if they were able to do just something actually where if they have a three-panel system, just make it so the center panel would work somehow, you know, and they could, you know, almost go in the same direction that Tangent did, is sort of build as you need, you know.
Modular.
Yeah, panels. You know, or I know that the Resolve panel is getting to a point now where, you know, maybe like you said, there are buttons that are in need of remapping that are no longer usable. It would be nice to see, say, some of those things updated and then, you know, like a center console compatibility where you could just use the center panel. And I'll tell you, there's a number of things in the Resolve panel that I would love to have, like direct access to RGB within Lift Gamma Gain individually, and a lot of things that just aren't available in the Resolve mapping for the third-party panels that are out there now. You know, so if they gave me the center section, I would be, man, let me tell you, I'd be selling myself on the street real quick.
Yeah, and then it becomes an issue of what can you price that for, too, but there is also on the Resolve panels, you'll find, I mean, you mentioned a little earlier about the Valhalla panels changing the way you do curves. There is a curve implementation that's all available on the panels that's a little different than what you would do on the GUI. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So do you think that Blackmagic would ever make one of these mid-range panels, or do you think that they're just kind of like a one-panel company?
They
want to stay monogamous.
That's right.
Well, I mean, there's the question of, like, would they upset their customers that have bought the panels by making a lower cost panel? Or do they care?
Look at all the other stuff that they do that just completely changes the industry. Like
The Teranex?
The Teranex, yeah. Right. I mean, I can't think of anything that was more disruptive than that.
Well, other than maybe like a Decklink card being disruptive.
That's kind of what their business is all about disrupting.
I think it's
price.
Like it's something that they do over time. And then the question is like if it was a premium product versus what the third party solutions offer, like where's that price where it's worth the volume that you'd need? You know, I think what you're seeing in the Resolve world is a lot of people not even using panels at all. It's almost like a drug addiction with the panels. You know, you start out and you use the software on the GUI, and then you find yourself kind of frustrated by it a little bit. So you go out and you get the Wave panel, and you start playing around with the Wave panel, and eventually you get to the point where you're frustrated by that a little bit. So you step up to the Elements, and eventually you get to the point where you're frustrated by that, and you end up maybe making the jump all the way to the Resolve panel. So, I mean,
before you know it, you're turning tricks for GTX cards.
Exactly.
I feel that way sometimes. But I don't know if how that plays out. I mean, you know, this is all speculation because I don't know anything, but it would be interesting to see. I mean, I would think that, you know, if you look at the price point, that would kind of make sense. It's not going to be the $7,000 or $8,000 price point. I think it's going to be more the $14,000 price point, you know, somewhere right in the middle between the low-cost panels and the higher-cost panels. That's kind of the gap. Like, there's a divide there, so I would think you'd want to kind of come in the middle of that.
Yeah, and if you think about it, even the price of what the 2Ks were, I mean, that's still pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, no, obviously, when Blackmagic bought DaVinci, everything just overnight just dropped significantly in price, so even the panels came down in price. I mean, of the first-party panels, the Resolve panels are by far the cheapest.
Yeah.
Right, the Blackmagic panels used to be called the Impresario.
Right.
That was when they were with still mostly DaVinci, right? The Impresario right. panels preceded the Resolve control panels, right?
Because it was a pretty short time between when DaVinci was bought by Blackmagic and when they released the Impresario, maybe a year or two?
I don't think it was even that long, but the You know, and then before that was the Renaissance, the 2K Renaissance.
Right, which were amazing. Those are great.
Which still work in, in Resolve, in Resolve Linux.
Company 3 still runs all 2K panels still.
Except for Bob Festa over at Company 3, who's, who just got Resolve console and ended up getting the Resolve panel. So he's like the one guy over there working on the Resolve panels.
Right, right, yeah.
Rubbing it in Dave Hussey's face.
You know, it would be a really interesting question for a colorist at that level. I know that he used Baselite for a number of years when he was at New Hat, and now he's using Resolve, and I'm sure that he probably moved fairly seamlessly, but it'd be interesting to see what a high-level user thinks of, say, moving from a base light to the Resolve panels.
I think it's like anything else. You know, there's things you miss, and then there's different strategies. You have to adapt your strategy a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's different.
Oh, I totally forgot about the tangent. Do you remember the V-Wave?
Oh.
It was the thing that was like, it's a thing that was built into the iPad.
Right.
It was right, the app.
Yeah.
That was like a wave, but for your iPad.
Yeah.
Is that still available?
I don't know. You know, probably it probably still only works with color.
That's the deal. Yeah, it only works with color. Right.
But there's another app. I kind of remember there was something where you could map different keys or different menu items to an iPad as well.
You're talking about like the control keys. There's a...
That's right.
Yeah, you can only do that with shortcuts. You can't do it with like the functions that's based on the shortcuts.
There's guys, Experimento Cinema created a nice Resolve, what we'll call shortcut app using control keys for iPad. So, and there's another really, gosh, guys, if you want to see something that I wish people would release out, you know, at least if you're interested in the iPad angle, is Gamma and Density has a gorgeous, absolutely beautiful color control surface for their software, but it's only for, I think it's really focused on sort of like a DIT use. And so Gamma and Density makes a product called 3CP, which is onset color management, and they have a really gorgeous iPad app for it. It's expensive too, actually. I think it's a couple $100s. But man, if you ever wanted to see what a really interesting control service could look like on an iPad, take a look at the Gamma and Density's iPad app for 3CP. Drool.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at something as basic as what they do for those interfaces with Photoshop and an iPad, I'm like, that would be really awesome if they could just keep all your stills on an iPad.
What you run into, though, is that, that one critical component and why the panels are the way they are is that tactile feedback.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
really
hard. It's hard. You have to look at the iPad in order to know where your fingers are and how you're manipulating things. I mean, there may be something, I haven't seen it yet, but there may be something that you could do with gestures that could kind of emulate that. I've always thought if you looked at like the Final Cut Pro X, like the color board interface that they have for their color correction, which is actually, it's Lift Gamma Gain, but it's all laid out on one board, and there's like different rings for the Lift Gamma and Gain.
Right.
And you can move them around the board. That interface is just begging for a multi-touch interaction.
I actually used the multi-gestures with the Magic Trackpad, and I have a map to different things with the Resolve. I did a short tutorial on it too, and it really speeds things up, especially if you're on a lower end panel, because you could just quickly, I swipe three fingers right and it tracks forward, swipe three fingers back, track backward, like four swipe up is to turn all your nodes off, and you start to get really used to it.
Yeah. I think there's looking forward into the future, there's a whole maybe gesture vocabulary that could be adapted that could be really interesting. And maybe it replaces on the panels, maybe it replaces the soft keys. Maybe instead of soft keys, you're doing gestures for functionality.
Yeah.
That's kind of a...
Like Minority Report style.
Yeah, well, we are kind of that, like in that really critical changeover period, right? We are changing the way we interact with our software. And so that's one thing to think about is like there's all these technologies that can be applied to other things that could be applied to our world as well.
Yeah.
One other interesting thing actually that Mike Woolworth of Scopebox actually was suggesting is that somebody should get a do-it-yourself project with like an Arduino, one of those little programmable USB things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That you could possibly have a project that would allow you to have use three trackballs, like just over-the-counter trackballs, and use them as like a Lift Gamma Gain control surface, and do it that, and then you would have like that would be the lowest cost solution. You know, you take that and you take one of those like G13, whatever the little keyboard commando, exactly. The macro key
the
things,
gaming controller, right?
Right, and then you've got a bunch of soft keys, and you've got a Lift Gamma Gain trackball control, and you've got pretty much a really functional control panel with commodity hardware. You know, it's something that like could bring down the cost even more and put Tangent out of business.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I see a Kickstarter.
Yeah, possibly, right. Yeah, exactly. Just that and 500 hours of labor and you'll have yourself a sweet little Surface with 8 controls.
Oh, 5,000 hours of labor.
I guess the Coloristo's Kickstarter to make your own panel will have to wait until the next episode of the Coloristo's. And Juan actually has something to announce to the Coloristo's listening audience.
Blackmagic Design has been kind enough to give us a license for Resolve, the full Resolve, to give away to one of our listeners, one of our wonderful Resolve using listeners. So if you guys are interested in getting a Resolve license, we actually debated for a long time how would we go about giving this away, and we decided to steal an idea from Kanan. And so we're going to ask you guys to review the Coloristo's on iTunes. We will pick a review at random, positive or negative. We're not going to judge. But, you know, if it's positive, I'm not going to say it's likelier that you win, but... but submit your review, and then we will announce a winner when we record our next podcast, which could be at an indeterminate date, but I would get on it as quickly as possible.
All right. So yeah, definitely review the Coloristo's on iTunes, and we'll get a winner drawn from those people. So with that, I'm Jason Myers, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Josh Petok, a colorist in Los Angeles. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Petok, or on my website at www.joshptalk.com.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist in New York City. And you can find me on Twitter at @j_salvo. I also float around Lift Gamma Gain and on the internets wherever color questions need be answered. Join us next time. And thanks for listening.